Hey everyone, welcome back to the Wealth Preservation Podcast. We are joined again by the Old Verdon Tennessee Pepper Company founders, Allison and Chris Verdon. And as always, I have my co-host here, Josh Saunders. Josh, how are you?
Good, man. We are excited to talk more chili peppers and entrepreneurship, two things that I am very fond of. So this should be another great episode.
Yes. And for anyone who's like, well, I don't know if I want to start my own chili pepper company, it's also going to be about developing your concept into a business and everything from testing out products to you know, just those unknowns of like, hey, here's actually getting your idea to the market. So plenty to dive into.
If you listen to our first episode, Allison and Chris were like, hey, everybody should start a food company. It's super easy. Like, you'll be making money hand over fist in like an hour. So just get it going like as soon as possible.
They did their
I think that's what they said.
That covers it.
Yeah, they did their last episode on the beach drinking Mai Tais, and we weren't able to you know do both episodes at one time because they just were like we got to take a nap. Got so much time, we got to take a nap.
So much time on our hands now that we're wealthy business owners. Just easy life, the easy life.
Well,
great. So Chris and Allison, welcome. Thanks for being on.
Good to be back.
Awesome.
Good.
So real quick, can you give everyone just a quick, for anyone who hasn't listened to the first episode, can you give everyone a quick, like maybe 1 or 2 minute description of just the Old Verdon's Tennessee Pepper Company and when you were founded?
We were founded in, well, technically founded in 2013 as far as the concept and launched part-time in 2014. We are a company that specializes in dehydrated chili pepper blends. And one of our big points is we work with a local farmer who grows our peppers, which enables us to process them within 24 hours of being picked. So it makes for a really fresh product, and I would dare to say one of the freshest products on the market.
Well, and just so everybody knows, I have my order is on its way in from Amazon of 3 different jars of Old Verdon's pepper. So my boys are excited. We're gonna have to order some cheese pizza and go for it.
We'll have to do like a quick video of like actually testing and reviewing the product. That'd be fun to do.
Yeah. On the YouTube channel.
Yes. Sure. Awesome.
Yeah. So real quick, I thought just before we started recording, everybody didn't get to hear this, but you know, in true entrepreneurial spirit, Chris and Allison, if you could tell everybody what you were doing this weekend, because we know you weren't sitting on the beach drinking Mai Tais, you were working. So what did this weekend entail?
Saturdays always entail the farmer's market. Knoxville is lucky to have one of the best farmer's markets in the nation. And happens every, if you're ever in Knoxville, you definitely got to check it out. It's got over 100 vendors, produce coming from all around. So it's a great, between produce and local food vendors and local artists, it's a great time and a great way to explore downtown Knoxville.
Yeah, and it's right in the heart of the city too. So, you know, you really get a feel for what Knoxville's like and what the people are like. And, I mean, it shows off Knoxville really well.
Yeah. So I just kind of want to go into that part of it a little bit. So how important was that, like, direct-to-consumer marketing for building your brand? I mean, obviously, you know, you guys do that every Saturday, so it's obviously not a waste of time. So how important has that been?
Well, first of all, we still do the farmer's market after 7 years because we love being a part of it. It's a great sense of community. It's a great way to interact with the community and meet a lot more people. But in starting out, it was really important because it gave us great feedback. People, you know, we could always depend on customers buying it and coming back the next week and telling us what they thought about the products. Anytime that we're introducing new items to the mix, it's a great way to get feedback from customers and just do market research.
Right.
You know, it's hard to just rely on your friends as far as, you know, hey, what do you think of this? Oh, it's the greatest. And then they're driving home like, oh my God. You know. So it's really important to reach out and talk to people who would tell you, you know, yeah, it's really not for me or whatever. Yeah.
Well, you should be able to get honest feedback from siblings. I mean, they're usually the friends that'll be brutal, right? I mean, I had a brother who had a company where he made pasties. And I told him, I was like, hey, these are good. And I would find any reason to tell you they're not. I mean, you know, so family, they usually can jab you a little bit, or at least siblings.
Well, we know it's good when I have people calling me, telling me that my brother sent them, you know, because it's such a great product. So whether or not he would lie to me, but at least I know that he's been sending customers my way. So
oh, perfect.
Yeah, he's like, well, this is actually easier than supporting you financially. I'll just have other people buy your stuff. So,
right. Oh, he expects to be given the bottles. So.
Oh, okay. That's typical brother.
Yeah, you get the honest feedback, but you also get the freeloading. So, you know, you get to take the good with the bad. So,
yeah. So I mean, kind of tailing on that, on, you know, going to the farmer's market, you know, kind of what was that, you know, the process like of developing crushed red pepper recipe? I mean, what was kind of the inspiration and what were you guys shooting for, and how long did it take you to do that?
You know, first we tried all the peppers individually, kind of see where they were at. And then from there, we had like five or six different blends. You know, some were too hot. Some had too many peppers. And then we kind of settled on one that was, you know, I wouldn't say middle of the road, because I think it's better than that. But, you know, the peppers were all pretty available. You know, I mean, that was, you kind of had to look like, well, where am I going to be able to get these? And if, you know, I can't get them from this spot, you know, where else can I get them? So, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I really love this, you know, one real obscure pepper. And, you know, it really kind of limits your ability to grow. So, you know, and I wouldn't say I went in with that, but, you know, it just kind of worked out that way, that we were, you know, found something that's, you know, we could make money on, and, you know, it was pretty easy to manufacture and cure the peppers.
So, yeah. Well, out of curiosity,
we've added blends, and we've done test gardens. And one of the biggest things that we had to do, because, you know, we do test gardens so that our farmer, so we can give the seeds to our farmer once we decide on the peppers. And the biggest part is, you know, will it grow here in this region? And so, you know, for adding new blends, that's a huge factor. You know, how sturdy are the peppers? How hardy are they? Will they stand up to rain, lots of sun, depending on the summer? You know, so there's a lot of things that go into play. And then flavor.
Yeah, and size is a big thing. Like, you know, I have all these people ask me, there's this pepper that grows in Florida. The name's escaping me. But, I mean, it's teeny. It's like the size of your small fingernail. And, I mean, it's a great chili pepper. But if I brought it to my farmer and said, hey, you know, I want 100 bushels of this, I mean, he'd run me over with his tractor. So, just have to kind of think, like, you know, how are you going to make it and use it?
Right.
And I mean, that's the advantage sauce has, is, you know, a little pepper and some vinegar goes a long way. But, mm-hmm. you know, drying peppers, it takes about a pound of peppers to make, you know, an ounce of pepper flakes. So it's, I had no
idea. It's tedious.
Yeah.
A lot of peppers. Yeah.
Man, I'd imagine after a day of testing nothing but dried peppers, you know, the various types of dried peppers, you probably got to the end of the day and you're like, well, the good news is I don't care what we have for dinner because I can't taste a thing. So my tongue is officially fried.
Yeah.
People all the time are like, hey, you want some hot sauce? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty good.
Yeah. the key to, I mean, the whole thing in starting this was that, you know, we wanted the first blend to kind of replace that generic jar of crushed red pepper. So number one, I mean, it had to be more flavorful, but we also didn't want it to be so hot that you didn't taste the flavors of the peppers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a super, believe it or not a super hot, spicy fan.
She's not a chili head.
No, I'm not a chili head. So for me, like the Tennessee Jerk, I mean, it, you know, that's our Caribbean and African pepper blend, and it's got some heat to it, and I can stand a little bit of it. I mean, I like it. It's a great flavor, but the key for us is to always make sure that our blends are not so hot that you can't taste your food.
We're not trying to hurt anybody.
Right. We're all about
yeah.
So Now, I will say the Tennessee jerk, I mean, that's really hot. Like, you know, and that kind of came about, you know, when we first had our product, we were going for like the 95% of the market that, you know, wants a little something spicy, but doesn't want to like experience it 2 hours later. So I'd have all these people come by and they're like, well, this just isn't hot. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty hot. So finally I was like, you know what? I'm going to make something that's really hot.
Yeah.
And so now people buy it and they think it's like the old stuff and sprinkle it on as liberally. And I'll see them next week. They're like, man, that's really good. It's really hot.
Ask and you shall receive.
Yeah.
Give what you wish for.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you guys were kind of shooting for that 95% of the market, like, you know, what was that process to kind of, were you guys just field testing at the farmer's market and other places, or kind of what was that process like?
Oh, we'd carry around little baggies with us in my purse. So we'd go out to eat pizza with our friends and I'd pull out like six little baggies full of dried pepper flake blends and get everybody's feedback. And then we kind of got a system down when we're coming out with new blends where we, you know, we label them, we send out a form that kind of asks about flavor, smell, heat level, all that kind of stuff. So we've gotten a little more scientific as we've grown.
Yeah, we're fancy now. You know, before it was just call and be like, hey, did you try that? Really, did you? And, you know, so but you know, you have certain people that you trust that are real excited about the product and, you know, feel comfortable saying, you know, this kind of missed the mark or this could have been a little different. So, you know, that's really important as far as, you know, coming out with because you get excited about stuff. And
if you need an official pepper taster, you can put my middle son on that. He is all about the chili peppers on his pizza, and he is a connoisseur of them. So
awesome.
He is very excited about the old Verdins that are coming. It's an excuse for us to get another pizza.
He's really excited about food in general. I mean, he's a food enthusiast, for sure.
He is a food enthusiast.
Well, there is a lot of great pizza in Knoxville. All different types. So, I mean, you can pretty much... It's as varied as our peppers.
That's awesome. So kind of the feedback process you guys go through is you guys send test samples out to, do you guys have like a group or a mailing list or just friends or people you trust or what?
We, the second go around, we sent them to friends, family members. And then we also kind of like through the farmers markets have gotten to know people who have said, hey, in the future, you know, when you're testing out, we'd love to kind of be a part of that. And so we've kind of kept that list and we'll send it out to, you know, send it out to other people who.
Old Verdon's super fans.
Yeah.
Gotcha. The super fans.
Yeah. The groupies.
They're groupies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, people that are always hanging out at the spice table at the farmer's market.
There is definitely a component of that.
Yeah. The cult following. I love it.
Well, and you know, so as you're developing the recipe too, you know, so you know, we'll kind of jump to the part where you guys have like the definitive, like, okay, we know what people like, we know, you know, what's gonna sell. Did you guys run into anything early on where you're like, hey, we know we have our super fans, but there's either not enough sales, not, you know, was there any particular licensing or just some hurdle where you're just like, shoot, we have something really awesome, we're just having a difficult time taking that next step into making it a business or increasing our sales?
Sure, lack of capital.
Gotcha. Yeah,
that was the biggest thing.
And you know, coming into the market with a brand that no one knows, mm-hmm. You know, and trying to figure out how to grow that brand, and you want to be a national brand. So how do you do that? Well, advertising and marketing is key. But when you don't have the funds to do that, you know, what do you do? I mean, I can definitely say that if we didn't live in a day and age where there was social media and mm-hmm. being able to market through social media for free, that we wouldn't be here. That was key in growing, at least starting growing our business locally. And then, you know, and there's some other, I mean, the websites of there's online distributing websites now where you get a, you know, we've gotten retail new accounts through these websites, and So, you know, having internet, I mean, that's, it's been a huge part, but lack of capital for a small business, it makes it really hard.
Yeah. I mean, you need it takes a lot of money, and especially for us, like, you know, peppers don't grow year round. So, you know, we've got to be able to store enough peppers to get us through the winter. Well, you just don't know how busy you're going to be or how much you're going to grow. So, you know, you think you've got enough peppers to get you there, and, you know, come spring and you're looking at your supply and it's like, man, I hope this, you know, big order just waits like another month.
Right.
Peppers. Yeah. I don't know if I told this story last time, but so I'll repeat it. But we had a guy that we were talking to in 2017 who was a broker. He is now our business partner. But in talking to him, he had a long history of dealing with CPG, you know, consumer packaged good products and getting them to the market. And he said, you know, it's very common these days for a product coming on new that you should have $1 million to start with. And that is slotting fees, you know, buying your way into the stores, basically advertising, branding, mm-hmm. marketing, food shows, all of that stuff. And Chris and I just looked at each other because we started with $10,000.
Yeah.
So we have literally bootstrapped our way through this. And also, you know, one thing that I've learned is it's made us scrappy and it's made us figure out ways to do things and not waste money. You know, we've made a lot of decisions over the past 8 years that I look back and I'm like, wow, you know, we're so lucky that we made that decision, not knowing what we know now. But we did it because we had to pinch every penny and, you know, mm-hmm. trying to figure out how can we do this the best way we can, you know, with hardly any money.
Yeah. Which is, you know, it's funny, that kind of ties into an episode that we recently did where we talked to someone who, he had self-funded a couple startups, and he talked about the disadvantages of going out and getting investors. And one of them was, he's like, well, when you go out and get investors, now you just have a whole bunch of capital and you just feel like you have to do a bunch of stuff. And so you end up spending it and you might spend it poorly, right? Whereas self-funded, you do, you know, develop that scrappy, like, hey, I have 1% of the advised nest egg. Right.
Like, right.
So margin for error.
Advertising is like, you know, where's my dollar spent the best? I mean, what's, you know, advertising, where am I going to get my best Thanks ROI? You know, I mean, it's,
I
want to kind of go back to the social media and the marketing part. So, you know, that's probably a whole episode's worth of right there, but how have you guys used social media and how, you know, how did you develop that strategy and how has it shifted?
Jumped in head first.
Yeah.
Not knowing anything. Well, I did kind of know because of our previous job. You know, we ran a hike-in lodge that was, I mean, it's very popular and very well known. And we started a blog for that company. So I really watched the power of social media and how the internet helped to change that business and get a further reach as far as its customer base. Sure. So I kind of knew, you know, that was the game we were going to have to play. And I had a little bit of knowledge, but like Instagram, I mean, I'm still struggling with that. You know, it's changing every day and figuring out how to reach your audience. You know, it's constantly changing. And we don't have the funds still to like hire somebody to do our social media. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those, you know, I took some courses. Luckily, you know, here in Knoxville, we've got the University of Tennessee. I took some courses on social media marketing to try to improve my skills. So it's just taking time and trial and error.
Yeah. And then we've been real fortunate too. Like, you know, we've had a lot of like news stations and stuff do segments on us. And that helped quite a bit. I mean, I think we've been on 3 or 4 different TV shows. And then we had a local radio personality did a show on us. And so, you know, you just kind of look for those opportunities and, you know, you'll find people who are like willing to help you out. I mean, that's kind of the nice thing about East Tennessee. It seems like, you know, if people want other people here to succeed with their business and really kind of lend a helping hand. At least that's been our experience.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of, you know, so you're doing all of this, right? And you're trying to figure out the social media world. And did you guys, you know, were you guys very strategic about your social media posts, or do you guys just try and just put up as much content as possible? Because creating content is hard. Mark and I know firsthand. And time consuming, but are you just like, hey, we're just going to go 100 miles an hour and create content? Or are you trying to be really strategic in how you do it?
Well, at first I was just creating whatever I could put out there.
Yeah.
And then I decided, you know, if we're going to be a national brand, a lot of the content that I was pushing was localized. Sure. And so then I kind of changed to where, okay, maybe we need to make it more of a national type national content, not necessarily sure. Focused on our community.
Yeah.
And then I've kind of gone back to where it's a mix. And it's like, you know, that community is what has helped us to make our product what it is. And we always want people to know where we are from and, you know, how great our community is and that we're a huge part of it and we really want to support it. So now I kind of mix it all up. And I found that actually gets a lot better results. Yeah. People want to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really do think people like to know the origin of kind of stuff and who's really making it, even if it's not from your community, but it kind of gives you that personal connection towards stuff. And people really like buying things that has the story behind it.
Right. And we're really in that era right now. I mean, it's all about the storytelling. And you look at a lot of the small brands that are coming up, you know, they're all sharing their story. We think, you know, the origins of our product and how it came about is a pretty cool story. So
absolutely.
You know, we like sharing it, which also helps us as far as kind of, like he said, you know, local radio stations and TV outlets and newspaper, you know, articles. I think we were an Outside magazine at one point due to the origin, you know, so. Yeah, I mean, the story is huge. It's a big part of it.
Yeah, yeah. And if anyone wants confirmation on their cool story, you can check out episode one where you can hear about them bawling their eyes out as they're drying peppers in their house and shoving towels underneath the doors. You know, and apparently Chris wants to go try getting maced, you know, because he says it's not going to impact him.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think they called it the dark decade where they didn't have any friends for like 4 or 5 years while they were drying peppers at their house.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know, I think that part of it is kind of cool. Going back to story of, you know, every entrepreneur has that story of like, hey, I started in our basement, or we started in our garage, or we started with nothing, and you know, and we made it work. And I think people can relate to that because it makes it almost relatable to everybody else that you can do this, right? It's not like we didn't just get lucky, right? We just kind of had hard work and kept banging on the door until it kind of finally broke, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And there were so many times that I heard other stories like this that kept us going. Times when I wanted to be like, what are we doing? It's time to stop. And, you know, I would hear those stories and it was like, okay, we're not the only ones. We're going to be all right. You know, we're moving in the right direction. So,
yeah.
You're telling me that 8-year-old Chris and Allison were not like, when I grow up, I'm going to be a pepper mogul. We're going to make crushed red peppers and it's going to be amazing. That's what 8-year-old you guys said.
Yeah, there was none of that.
None of that.
At one point, I wanted to be an air traffic controller because I heard they got a lot of time off.
Hey,
I think we call those leisure lovers. Like, I'm going to pick a career where I get a lot of time off. Yeah.
We're still leisure lovers. What happened?
Well, let's kind of start walk down that process of, you know, setting up and getting into your first stores. Like, what was that process like? You're like, you know, you have your jar of chilies and are, you know, and you're like, how do we have people go buy it? How do we do that?
Well, our first, so in a lot of my research, you know, one thing that it kind of pushed that, you know, a lot of the research said was kind of think of your product and think of your area as a bullseye and really grow it as a bullseye. And so you want to kind of, you know, look at, like, at the time we were in Gatlinburg, so let's look locally, what stores, and we had a friend who owned, and he still does, he owns a pottery studio called Treasure in Earthen Vessels, just to give him a plug, and he was like, I would love, you know, lots of tourists came through there, and he was like, I would love to have your product on the shelves, and so he was our very first customer, so, I mean, and that's a store, you know, and so we kind of grew it from there as far as other small stores. And then there is a local co-op here in Knoxville who was our first, what we considered to be grocery store which was super exciting, you know, was the first place to get us on the shelf amongst other, you know, food items and like, and the process, you know, was interesting. I mean, we learned a lot as far as that process and filling out the applications, what they required and that kind of thing.
How often they review, like, you know, it's the grocery business. It's not like, you know, they're constantly looking to add a barbecue sauce or something like that. A lot of those categories, you know, they make the decision for the category once or twice a year. So if you miss the opportunity, you've got a year wait before they go back to it.
Gotcha.
I had no idea.
And then we had a local grocery store that's, they've got 130, maybe more than that now, locations throughout the East Tennessee, Southern Virginia region. And so our local store said that they would take us on and put us on the shelves, which was great because we had about a year and a half of selling it in that one store before we actually were able to get it into the rest of the other locations. Mm-hmm. But it was our foot in the door. Finally, took us a little bit, but boy, when that day happened, it was like Christmas.
It was really funny. We drove up to their main distribution hub and there's all these tractor trailers backing up to these big garage doors. And we pull our little Kia up to it and, open up the hatchback and pull this crate out. It just looked surreal. Like, you know, we need to get another vehicle.
Well, I was a little bit, it was 6 o'clock in the morning and it was dark. And when you pull into this warehouse distribution area, there's like five big warehouses. And so you pull up to the gate and they say, okay, you go to warehouse number one, you're in slot number six. So you go in and you back into slot number six. And I'm like, man, it's super dark. Like, What if a big tractor trailer like tries to start backing in and doesn't see us? And
the roof of our car was level with the floor we were loading into.
this I love it.
Up over our heads and sliding it in. But you know, even the guards there were like, "That's pretty cool." You know, like
super supportive. They were like, "One of these days, you're gonna have your stuff on one of these tractor trailers."
Yeah, and, you know. Like hopefully soon. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, those are the types of things where, you know, people see like, you know, those big semis backing up and they're like, well, there's no way I could get my products, you know, to that level. It's like, hey, you don't have to, right? I mean, obviously you can still distribute if you're much smaller. You don't have to be one of those big distributors. So
you can still distribute in your Kia Sorento. You'll be just fine. Luckily now though, we do have an extended, one of the Mercedes Sprinter vans. So we've really stuck
that. Nailed up.
Yes.
So when you, on that transition where you guys were like officially getting into stores, did you guys have like maybe an overhaul of like, hey, if we're going to be on shelves, you know, there's things not recipe related, like, you know, color scheme or label design. Did you guys do like an overhaul of that? Or you're like, nope, everything's good. Just get it on the shelves and we'll deal with that later.
Yeah, absolutely. We did. And that's interesting. So, you know, when we first started this, you know, I mean, when we were first starting the idea, we thought, well, we'll just get a friend to draw up a logo. And then we thought, you know what, we probably should spend a little bit of money. If we're really wanting this to go national, we need to like think ahead of the game and like, you know, start off with a legit logo. So we hired a local company in Knoxville to create our logo, and it was a fantastic logo and design. Our problem being that we didn't, and we just didn't think about this, was that we really needed a brand, not the product to the product name to pop off. But you also want to start with a brand because our idea was to grow it for more than just one product. Mm-hmm. And we didn't think about that at the time. Now, at the time, I mean, our logo was great for the couple of SKUs that we had because it really stood out on the shelves. But in 2017, we started to kind of think, that, you know, we've got multiple items here and we really want to grow the brand. And then one thing is, what would look good on a baseball hat?
Gotcha.
You know,
mm-hmm.
What's your brand to be on a baseball hat or a t-shirt? You know, what's going to look good? So we hired another local company and they came up with an actual logo, which helped us to really, really broaden the brand, and gave us Old Verdon's Tennessee Pepper Company, which we didn't have the Tennessee Pepper Co. before that. So it really helped to try to, we wanted, you know, what would you put on the bottle for somebody in Washington State to mm-hmm. know that this is a product that's coming out of Tennessee? You know, and so the Tennessee Pepper Co. was important to us. And then this brand kind of helped to bring us all and bring it all under the, you know, one brand. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So what was it like the first time? So you guys kind of got into that one grocery store, but when you guys kind of had your first big account, you're like, oh my gosh, this thing is, we're actually going to sell it at scale, because obviously going to scale creates its own problems, right? You're like, oh man, we don't just need 10 pounds of peppers a day now. Now we need 100 pounds of peppers. So what was that first big order like? And you're like, this, wow, this is amazing.
Probably when we got into, well, we thought at first the Food City, our Food City order, and that was the one that had the local grocery store. We thought that was a big order. And then we got an order to be into the local, the Kroger's in Tennessee. And that was an even bigger order. And so each time, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, we're going to have to start like 2 weeks ahead of time to get this all together. And now it's like, we can do this within a day, not a problem. But you know, we've been really careful. You know, a lot of people, there's some bigger distributors that distribute to like all the Whole Foods or distribute nationally. And we've been really careful about not going with those large distributors just yet, because we're not ready. Number one, number two, they charge a lot of different fees. And we know that we can't produce that amount. And so, you know, and once again, falling back to the whole bullseye, the target, you know, we've been really careful about, okay, well, we've saturated our area. Let's move regionally. Let's move regionally plus Florida. Let's with a few independent retailers throughout the United States. You know, but the bigger stores, we've kind of stuck in our region for right now.
Yeah, we don't want to, you know, ever have an opportunity where someone who took us on early on and then we weren't able to take care of, you know, the people who were with us at the beginning. So you don't want to like outgrow the people who got you where you are. So you just have to kind of, you know, keep that in mind and be patient and, you know.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here thinking about your guys's, you know, brand and what you guys are developing. You know, you guys are more than just, you know, we're the people that you put crushed red peppers on top of pizza. You're kind of want to be like the go-to brand for all things peppers, right? I mean, for high quality, you know, this is across the whole food spectrum, right? Am I kind of, or am I oversimplifying that?
I mean, you think about every pizza restaurant in the country and there's that generic jar of peppers. Yeah. Every time I go in one and see it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to knock you off this table.
I love it.
The enemy.
But even not for like crushed red peppers, it's like, you know, I mean, it's almost, remember how maybe like 20 years ago or 30 years ago, Tabasco was like synonymous with like chili peppers or with like a hot sauce, right? You know, it was like, you didn't ask for like, do you have any hot sauce? You asked, hey, do you have any Tabasco, right? But it's almost, you're trying to build that kind of brand where it's, we want to, you're going to put peppers on something, you want to ask for the old virgins, right? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. We want to be like, you know, McCormick's is this spice umbrella. We would like to be the McCormick's of peppers.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, it's funny too how your brain kind of has to switch, you know, strategies, right? Because you're not just producing it for one item. Here's like a single use product. Like, hey, we just go put these on pizza. It's like, hey, if you want great peppers and want to make your foods taste amazing, you need to think old virgins, peppers and spices almost, right? Does that kind of make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's just really cool. It's just interesting to see how brands have to transform. You know, they think they're doing one thing and they're actually in a different market than they thought they originally were. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Sure. We started out with our blend, you know, none of our pepper blends has salt in them. Okay. So, and we didn't even think about the fact that, well, we're going to hit a whole audience here who's low sodium diets, and they want hot sauces. Well, there's not a whole lot of hot sauces out there that doesn't have salt in it. So a lot of people get really excited because they're like, oh my gosh, I can have heat and flavor and there's no salt. And this is great. You know, I can spice up my food and not have to worry about sodium.
I mean, you wouldn't believe the number of people who are on a restrictive diet for health reasons who, you know, just had to give up hot sauce basically and find our product and are like, man, it has really made a huge difference in my life. And yeah, I mean, that's just such an added bonus. It's like, sure.
we're in an age where people, everybody's label readers, you know, mm-hmm. which is a great thing. And you pick up rubs, spice rubs, and it's like, good grief, like how many different ingredients are in here? And you've got sugar and you've got sodium and you, you know, all this kind of stuff. You know, so people who are doing all these like Whole 30 and paleo and all that kind of stuff, our product has been perfect for them.
Yeah. And you're capturing not just the, I mean, really, you're capturing the people who are on that restrictive diet and obey the restrictive diet. There's still all those people who were put on that restrictive diet who are just like, yeah, yeah. What? And now you're like, hey, now you don't have to cheat. Like, good news.
Aspirational.
And I mean, you know, the interesting thing about your guys' scaling too, because I like, did you guys have, I mean, were you guys tempted to just kind of go with one of those bigger distributors, or did you guys make a definitive claim of like, hey, we are growing a little bit slower, but we think it's going to pay out in the long run?
You know, we've been really lucky that some things that have happened to us along the way, some hiccups here and there, actually turned out to benefit us, and basically things that could have caused us to go under, you know, didn't fall through the way that we thought that they were going to, and ended up saving our company. So we're very careful as far as who or what, you know, how we grow. In one instance is there is a large company out west, kind of like Whole Foods, who we would have loved to have been on their shelves. They've got, I think, over 240 stores, and they require a free case just to get on the shelf, a free case of each SKU that you have. And we had four at the time. They would want a free case of each. So four cases for free for per store. So 240 stores just to get you on the shelves. So there's that pay to play kind of mentality. Then a lot of the distributors require that as well. You know, for small companies like us, we can't do that. I mean, there's no way we can do that. Yeah. And so, you know, it kind of made us think that, you know, that we've got to figure out other ways to grow. And luckily for us, we're in an era where people are all about local. So, you know, all the stores in Tennessee have local Tennessee product shelves. Well, we don't have to pay anything to be on those shelves. And once you've proven your sales, then they'll pull you into the regular mix. So there's ways to get in there without having to, like, you know, pay all that money that a lot of the bigger brands can pay. And with that being said, you hear horror stories from other companies, other brands talking about these larger distributors, and how one incident can put them under. And we don't want to take that chance. So we've kind of steered clear of them for right now, and will for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry.
A big part of it too is, you know, we're kind of limited by our capacity on how much we can dehydrate in a day. So even if we got into, say, you know, Costco said, hey, we want to put you across the country, well, I've still got to be able to dry all these peppers. So, you know, we have to make enough money to buy, you know, keep upping our dehydrator game. So, you know, that's also a big, you know, you don't want to grow past your capacity. Right. So, you know, we're going
to. The other thing to think about is, you know, so you get into a larger store and you're put all over the country. Well, other parts of the country don't know your brand yet. So how are you going to get things off, you know, people to buy your product? Right. It's not just a matter of getting your product on the shelf. It's getting your product off the shelf, because that's what they really care about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't want to grow so fast that, you know, nobody in that area knows who you are. They're not going to pick up your stuff.
So, you know, just to throw some numbers out there, so we can cut this, or you don't have to give away any trade secrets or anything, but, you know, just as a number, how many pounds of peppers do you guys process a year now?
Last year, let's see, I think I added up that we did over about 30,000 pounds of peppers. All right, so we're estimating between 30,000 and 40,000 pounds of peppers last year.
It's a lot of peppers.
That's a lot of peppers.
Yeah,
that's a lot of peppers.
Yeah. So, you know, when you guys were going to find the grower, right, and you guys kind of create that relationship with the local farmer, you know, kind of what's his capacity, right? I mean, are you guys his only customer now, or kind of how does that kind of played out?
I mean, the nice thing about that is we really haven't even scratched the surface of what he can do. I mean,
okay.
You know, and that was another thing, like, you know, peppers, he puts them in the ground, and it's not like you can just go out and be like, hey, I need you guys to back off growing for a little bit till he's ready. I mean, he'll call me and say, hey, I've got 60 bushels of serranos or poblanos or all these peppers. Well, I can only dry so many in a day. Okay. So it's, you know, that was a big part of it is figuring out how I can run my dehydrator around the clock during pepper season,
right,
and get going. And but he also sells to a big distributor in Atlanta, and then other people show up at his farm and stuff. But you know, he knows that, you know, my business is growing, and I've always kept my word with him. I've, you know, paid for, you know, what I asked, and you know, always been real appreciative. So, you know, you develop that relationship of, you know, he's not expecting, you know, this thing to take off overnight. So it's been that working relationship of, you know, I tell him, look, this is what I think I'm gonna need next year, and then if it goes above that, it's just a bonus. And so he'll try and figure out how many plants and all that. But it's pretty stressful. Like, you know, it's kind of like gambling. Do I think I'm going to grow, you know, and then suddenly, you know, you get another grocery store who wants more, and it's like, man, I wish I had more peppers, or, you know, so it's, you just have to kind of roll with it and not stress too much about it.
But yeah.
That's part of it.
Yeah. You know, kind of talk about that lesson of you guys, you know, you guys kind of, your business is kind of bifurcated, right? I mean, it seems like Allison kind of runs the marketing and office type stuff, and Chris, you kind of run the production side of it, right? I mean, did you ever think about that as you were kind of running, starting the business, that you're like, oh, hey, I'll be the marketing person, and you'll be the, you know, you'll be the production person, you know, because Chris, you had a creative arts background, right?
Yeah. Well, I knew from the get-go I wasn't going to be telling Allison what to do.
So. He has a creative arts background of drawing nude.
Yeah.
not on the internet. And as far as Facebook and Instagram, he does well to do his own personal page.
Yeah, that's the last time. I'm like, God.
Okay, well, I take that back about the arts thing. I don't know if that would be a good brand building.
I mean, maybe I'd get peppers off the shelf more. I don't know.
Maybe it's sell more.
Label on that pepper label. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, these are hot peppers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to spice up your sex life? I mean, you could go through a lot of those.
Yeah. Well, you know, we always tell people here, you better wash your hands before and after you go to the bathroom.
Oh, that's awesome. So as you guys were growing the business, though, who were some of those people that were kind of instrumental in kind of helping you get going? Did you guys read a book, or was there somebody you guys kind of followed on YouTube or Instagram or something like that that kind of kept the juices flowing?
Well, there was on Market Square, there was a small business City of Knoxville incubator that would give you advice on how to grow your business and stuff like that. And early on, we went and talked to him, and you know, he gave us a lot of good advice as far as, you know, or it wasn't so much that he had a lot of advice, but he was very encouraging on saying, you know, you're doing a lot of the things right, you know, and so it's like having a business plan and looking down the road. We had a friend who was a lawyer who, you know, gave us a lot of advice, and you know, he said, if you're going to fail, fail fast, which is kind of terrifying, but we seem to have avoided that. So
we didn't have a whole lot of mentors as far as doing what we're doing. You know, it's just recently that Knoxville's gotten a lot more smaller companies kind of jumping into the whole consumer packaged good industry. So we're kind of, we were kind of the first ones.
I mean, as far as like, I'm sure there's other small food producers in Knoxville. We just didn't know anything about this business. So,
right.
You know, once we got into it, we started making those connections and talking to other people and doing, you know, networking. So, you know, people will find you, you know, who are in the same boat and call you and ask you questions. It just kind of happens organically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So kind of, you know, as Go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, and you know, so you had your, you know, your business plan, your business model. Are there any things that you guys are currently doing to just kind of fine tune or track and say like, hey, this wasn't our business model. Maybe we should throw it out or include this.
We were always initially saying that we just wanted to be wholesalers and sell to, you know, grocery stores and other markets and all that. Well, we kept getting people saying, well, where can I buy your stuff? And it's like, well, if you go to the website, it's, you know, it'll tell you everywhere. And, you know, realizing how hard it is to get on the shelves and stuff like that. Well, this year we finally opened up a brick and mortar location where we sell, you know, our peppers is kind of the main focus. But we also trying to give back. We sell other small specialty brands from around the country who are kind of in the same boat we were. And yeah. And promoting those stories and,
yeah, and brands that aren't represented here in Knoxville, mm-hmm. And brands that we've come across in our day-to-day business that we just think are really cool. And, you know, and people, we wanted to create a space for foodies who like to, you know, check out new stuff and where the food trends are going and just enjoy experimenting, being adventurous, you know, trying different flavors and different products. So, so a month and a half ago, we opened up we say the first artisanal food market, it's Old Burden's artisanal food market. So
that is awesome. I am definitely going to need to run by there. Like,
soon. Where is that at?
Yeah. Where's that at?
The address?
So we're about a block from where the new stadium in the old city is going to be. We are in the warehouse district at 204 Randolph Street.
Great.
There we go. Boom. That, Josh, maybe Randolph that should Street. Be just where we have our next business meeting. I don't know.
It's a very good location.
Yeah.
We like to say, if you know, you know. I mean, it's kind of one of those, you know, it's a destination for sure. For right now. We're looking towards the future and what's going to be happening in the area.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, kind of what is next? I mean, is there a market segment or segments you guys are going to go after? I mean, you guys have started the you know, obviously the artisanal food market. And
honestly, when we first started this, I mean, we have tried our pepper blends on so many things from like, I mean, I make a fudge with it at Christmas time. That's fantastic. We put it on sweet potato chips. There's so many different ways that we've used it that we could definitely see food products. You know, I mean, you go to the grocery store and you've got potato chips with different flavors on them. Sure. Well, why couldn't there be an Old Burden's, you know, red hot sweet potato chip or popcorn or, you know, any of it. So we definitely see down the road there being products, you know, using for people who like spicy but want flavor.
And, you know, on the potato chip market, like, you know, you see like Tabasco Lay's and like Sriracha Ruffles. Well, when you take a liquid hot sauce and dry it to make it on a chip, you really lose what was great about the hot sauce and end up with a pretty marginal potato chip. But because they're still dry already, you put it on a potato chip with a little salt. I mean, it's awesome. Yeah. So down the road, if there was a Old Burden's, you know, potato chip division, I mean, I'd be thrilled. I'd probably be about 50 pounds heavier.
I would too. Yeah, Chris, I would also be thrilled. I love potato chips.
I'm always thrilled when potato chips are involved. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing. You know, we looked into, you know, making our own beef jerky, and you know that again was a real cost thing. Like, I think the initial beef was like $50,000 to get our first run of beef jerky from a co-packer. So it's those kind of things where you just have to say, hey, you know what? Just focus on your initial product right now. And it doesn't mean down the road you can't branch out into other things. You just have to get the plane off the ground.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess if you were to, you know, go back in how you guys have done things. You said there was a lot of things that happened that you're like, oh, that actually turned out to be, you know, positive. Was there anything that you feel like you could have done or you know, things that you do differently now to maybe get into stores faster or, you know, would it be opening your own brick and mortar faster? I mean, what do you think would have been better had you gone back and redone this?
Honestly, I mean, the biggest thing is time. Mm-hmm. I mean, having the time, you know, and it's been only two of us until this year. We just hired our first two part-timers. So, you know, I don't know what I could have done differently in that sense. And honestly, looking back at what we've done and how we've grown it, I'm really happy with how we've grown it. You know, we're really increasing sales, and we see that through the numbers coming from the different locations. I think that not knowing this industry when we first got into it, we've done a lot of things right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some of it accidentally, you know, it was just kind of, well, your gut says to do it this way, and it just kind of worked out. But, you know, and I will say, like, the nice thing about the way we've done it is the people that we work with have all been really happy. Like, our sales are good. You know, the product, we tell them this product's going to sell, and it does. And so that, you know, people cut you a lot of slack if you do what you say you're going to do. So it's worked out really good. I mean, obviously, you know, maybe we could have applied to two grocery store chains at the same time. And, you know, maybe you only get one. But it's that kind of, you know, patient, persistent, just keep at it kind of thing.
I mean, I think maybe the only thing I could say is that I wish that we'd had more capital, but I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah. Can't control that part, really. I mean, that's, yeah. Which, I mean, we, you know, I guess jumping off, you know, off our original question list too, you mentioned that this year you hired two part-time employees. What was that kind of like, as far as like, hey, we've got to hire someone, but there's, you know, do we need an employee handbook? Do we need a manual? Like, you know, what was the hiring process like?
So because they're two part-timers, they're contract workers. Okay. To start. Our bookkeeper advised us that was the best way to go for right now. And so we do have, you know, the only thing that we made them sign, we do have an NDA that we make everyone sign. And we now have a social media policy, just kind of stating that we, you know, want control of what's out there as far as our brand. Then
a lot of safety talk. I'm like, don't touch your eye.
right.
Yeah. But
other than that, though, we're kind of learning as we go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny that, you know, when you grow a business, it always develops other problems you didn't even really know existed until you hit them, right? There's some of those things you're like, I wish I would have known this. And you're like, well, there was really no way to know that because we didn't know that was going to be a problem because we didn't even know it existed yet.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I will say I, you know, fantasize when people talk about, oh, you know, I had to go to HR. I'm like, oh, man, I can't wait till I have an HR.
Chris is going to live there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you report each other to HR. Currently, that doesn't really go very far.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, there'll be a lot of discussions like, who died and made you HR today?
So what advice would you kind of give someone that's kind of wants to get into the, you know, packaged food industry or, you know, and develop that? Besides just not doing it.
Well, you know, the biggest advice I would say is get a lot of feedback you start, and definitely not from just your friends and family. Like, you're going to get the least reliable results from people who love you, and that's the way it should be. Like, you know, you don't want to hear your mom say, man, that really sucks, you know. She might think, but you know, strangers are going to tell you, you know, that they like it or they don't like it, and that feedback you can't put a price on. And don't take it personally. Like, if someone says they don't like your product, they're not saying they don't like you. They're just, maybe they just don't like peppers or barbecue sauce or whatever.
And get your numbers down. I always tell people, you know, have your numbers in order. Like, get your cost of goods figured out. Get your wholesale pricing figured out. Find out, you know, what the average margin is for a grocery store. You know, have those numbers, like, figured out before you jump in. Because that's a main part of the game.
Mm-hmm. And where you want to go, like, you know, like, we've got a friend who's a coffee roaster, and he just has his little coffee roasting business, and he's super happy with it. Like, he doesn't want to be in, you know, every grocery store. And so if you kind of know where you want to be, it's easier to get there than to just constantly be cranking something out and not know what your end is. So at least you know you're making progress when you know where you're going, and you know, realize that it's a lot of work and a lot of weekends and nights and stress, but it's at the end of the day, it's really rewarding.
Yeah. No, it's just Mai Tais on the beach for a business owner. It's just relaxing and money, fistfuls of money everywhere. It's easy.
Yeah. You know, I've been to every state, and Hawaii was the last one to visit. And I told Allison, you know, if I had come here first, I wouldn't have bothered with the other 48.
Yeah, you're like, man, this makes South Dakota seem like a wasted trip.
Yeah. No, that's our goal. Like, they were like, why are you working so much? It's like, because I'd like to retire to Hawaii, you know? So, you know, got to have a dream.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There are worse places to retire.
Yeah. So before we dive into the speed round here, what is one other fundamental? I mean, you guys kind of talked about you outsource some of the accounting first, but what was the fundamental that you think a entrepreneur, a newbie business owner needs to have to kind of probably make it work, or you wish you had known?
You know, I think when we initially started, I was using not a commercial grade slicer and dehydrator. And I mean, I was making it work, but it was a lot more work. And I think I would have, if I'd known how great it was having, you know, good commercial equipment that was up to the job, I don't know what I would have sold a kidney to get it.
Yeah.
So, you know, try and use the right tools for the job. And if you don't have those, then figure out something to work. You know, I have a commercial coffee grinder that I grind all my peppers with, and you know, it was $400 used, but a commercial spice grinder is like $4,000. So, you know, it's being able to improvise and do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of know where to cut, you know, where you can cut corners and get away with something else, and where you're like, man, we should really spend the money on this. This is a huge help.
Yeah. So, you know, awesome. And it always helps to have a spouse who's, you know, supportive. You know, if your wife's not on board, then, you know, you probably shouldn't open a food business.
All yeah, I hear is everybody should open a food business, and it's super easy. Yeah. That's all I hear.
Like, you should have either a supportive wife or a supportive spouse or a really good divorce attorney. Either one of those will work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, hey, let's jump into the speed round, Josh. You know, it's been an awesome episode, and I can't wait to get these last few questions through. Awesome. So, first speed round question: if you guys were on the show Shark Tank and you got an offer from all of the sharks, which shark do you think you're going with, and why?
Probably Barbara Corcoran.
Yeah. Yeah, she waited tables early in her life, so
there you go.
Kindred spirit. Yeah, she's a kindred spirit.
Well, yeah. Barbara, yes. If you're listening, you know, free lead into the, you know, we've gotten in with the Old Verdon, Tennessee Pepper Co. So,
yes,
we'll come to you.
I love it. All right, so number two. So, do you have any new releases coming out? And if you are, can Mark and I be a guinea pig for any of the flavors? On the test board.
No new releases coming out. We just came out with a dehydrated hot honey.
Ooh.
So nice. Yeah, you know, you see all these regular hot honeys. Well, our dehydrated hot honey is all the flavor without the mess.
Mm.
Popcorn. Cool. Forget it. Yeah.
Huh. That's really cool. Yeah. I love it.
Perfect. All right, non-business related. So, if you got to pick one chef to endorse Old Verdon's, who do you think is going to be promoting you guys?
Sean Brock.
Sean Brock would be a good one, but Chris Lilly, he runs Big Bob Gibson's Barbecue in Decatur, Alabama, and he is a barbecue smoking god.
He's more of a grill master than a chef, but
okay. Well. Yeah. That counts. In my book, that totally counts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But in Chris's book, he's more of a god than a man. So
yeah,
that's who he wants to endorse his product.
Yeah. If he called and said, hey, you want to quit peppers and learn how to smoke a pig, I'd be like, see you, Allison.
Oh, that is.
I'm not expecting that.
Oh,
no.
So for either of you, last question in the speed round. If you could acquire one skill tomorrow, what would it be?
And maybe I should say besides smoking a pig.
Yeah, besides smoking a pig, yeah.
I would probably like to be more persuasive as far as, you know, being able to talk people into picking up my product.
Okay. I like it. How about you, Allison?
Oh, Lord. One skill? Maybe being able to get my husband trained after 20 years.
Nah, that's impossible.
Yeah.
Good luck with that one.
You should have said practical skill or real skill.
Yeah, practical, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I'd like to fly, yeah, too, but that's not my skill.
Yeah. That makes me very nervous.
I've been working on it for 20 years.
Yeah.
You'll never break me.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, man.
Awesome. Well, hey, before we sign off, where can I tell everybody where can we get a hold of Old Verdant? How do you buy your products and come visit your store and contact you and Instagram, all that stuff?
So we are on Facebook and Instagram. We have a website where you can purchase. We have free shipping. We are on Amazon. We are in over 450 stores around the nation. So if you go to our website and check the retail locator, put in your zip code, and it should help you find if there's a location near you.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, we're in Publix, Whole Foods, Food City, but if we're not in your grocery store, the biggest thing you can do is to ask the grocery manager and say, hey, I love this product. I'd rather buy it from you than order it online. Those people I just want to kiss. So,
you know. Hey, do we need to report you to HR?
Yeah. Or I need to hire a more attractive sales rep.
Like Chris is trying to kiss the clients again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good times.
For anyone who does want to find their product, we will have links in the show notes as always. Go follow them on social media. Give them a like, give them a shout out. And obviously, if you want to test out some fresh peppers from the Tennessee Pepper Co, go ahead and click on one of those links. We'll definitely have the Amazon one on there. And then if you'd like to be in the good graces of Chris, go tell your local grocery store, hey, bring me Old Verdant's.
Yes. More Old Verdant's. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to be on. We're excited. I'm excited to have peppers on my pizza and come visit your guys' store. And we're excited to be here in East Tennessee. So thanks for having us.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you very much. And lastly, nothing we say can and should be taken as tax, legal, and financial advice. If anything on this show sparked your interest, go seek your CPA, attorney, or financial counsel. Or go ahead and give us a call and we'll point you in the right direction. So thank you, everyone, and can't wait for the next episode.